Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddhaya Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamane Namaste Sarasvata Devi Gauravani Prachadane Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschacharisha Tarane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 29, Verse 20. Yatavata rato granam avrinte ganda asayat evam yoga ratam cheta atmanam avikariyat yatavata rato granam avrinte ganda asayat evam yoga ratam cheta atmanam avikariyat. Yata, as, avata, of air, rata, chariot, granam, sense of smell, avrinte, catches, ganda, aroma, asayat, from the source, evam, similarly, yoga ratam, engaged in devotional service, chitta, consciousness, atmanam, supreme soul, avikari, unchanging, yat, which. Translation. As the chariot of air carries an aroma from its source and immediately catches the sense of smell, similarly, one who constantly engages in devotional service in Krishna consciousness can catch the Supreme Soul, who is equally present everywhere. Purport. As a breeze carrying a pleasant fragrance from a garden of flowers at once captures the organ of smell, so one's consciousness, saturated with devotion, can at once capture the transcendental existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who, in his Paramatma feature, is present everywhere, even in the heart of every living being. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Kshatriya, present within this body, but he's also simultaneously present in every other body. Since the individual soul is present only in a particular body, he is altered when another individual soul does not cooperate with him. The supreme soul, the super soul, however, is equally present everywhere. Individual souls may disagree, but the super soul, being equally present in every body, is called unchanging or avikari. The individual soul, when fully saturated with Krishna consciousness, can understand the presence of the Supersoul. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita that a person saturated with devotional service and full Krishna consciousness can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead either as Supersoul or as the Supreme Person. Translation: as the chariot of air carries an aroma from its source and immediately catches the sense of smell, similarly, one who constantly engages in devotional service in Krishna consciousness can catch the Supreme Soul, who is equally present everywhere. So, this whole section deals with the idea that the Lord should be seen in all beings and should be seen everywhere. even though that is only one aspect of the Supreme Lord called the Paramatma feature. And the devotee actually is more appreciative of the Bhagavan aspect of the Lord with whom we have a personal relationship. The point here is that we should understand that though he is the deity in the temple, he's in the holy name, and he exists in the spiritual world as Bhagavan, and we have our relationship with him, he is not separate from anything in this material world, though it looks completely different from him. Supreme Lord is spiritual. Matter is unconscious, inert, full of ignorance. So how is it possible that the Lord can exist in the material world, be part of the material world? Yet our philosophy says that the Lord is everything and he's everywhere, even in material nature. Now, of course, most Vaishnava philosophies will say, well, the Lord is in things, but he's still different. So the Lord is the cause of everything, but he's not exactly matter as such. And he presides in matter, but he's also different from it. And Gaudiya Vaishnavas, however, say that the Lord is matter and he's not matter. The Lord is the jiva and he's not the jiva. So this is our philosophy, achintya bheda bheda. Bheda means different, and this is the usual idea. God is different from the jiva and different from matter. And everyone will accept that. Abheda, no difference. So that's generally Shankara's philosophy. There is no difference. Everything is Brahman and nothing else exists. No matter, nothing else. Why would we say that as Vaishnavas? Why do we say Abheda? Then we become Mayavadis or whatever like that. But we will find that if we look in Bhagavatam or we look in the Upanishads, there we'll find statements of oneness are quite common. The Lord is everything. The Lord is one. And we see even the universal form there. The God is all the material elements, etc. We have the famous statement, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Brahman is everything. How do we accommodate such statements of oneness when we say everything is different? Why they even say, talk about oneness? Of course, we can explain oneness in the sense simply as it's figurative, and this means that the Lord is in control of everything, and that's what most Vaishnavas do. We take it a step further and say, no, there is a oneness also between God and everything. Otherwise, his position as the Supreme would be somewhat limited. We say one. At the same time, we also say there is difference. So we say both things exist in God, oneness and difference. In this way, we illustrate the great power of the God, of the Supreme Lord, to pervade everything and to be identical with everything and at the same time be different from everything. This particular example here is one of God being everywhere, Supreme Lord being everywhere, being in everything and being everything also. Just as the air carries aroma and it spreads everywhere. We should think of like the aroma is everywhere. Through the process of devotional service, we can also understand or detect the presence of the Lord everywhere in all things. At the same time, he is not contaminated. So therefore the word avikari is used here, unchanging, which means that though he's everywhere and he's in matter, he identifies with matter, he's completely different from matter. He's always the same spiritual entity. This is a little different from the jivas. The jivas are sometimes called all-pervading also, sarvaga. But there's sarvaga in a different way. Our consciousness is limited to one body. We cannot spread ourselves into all bodies in all places. Supreme Lord can do that, but we cannot do that. That's one difference. The other difference is that we become affected by close contact with matter. We become attracted to matter, and we try to enjoy matter, and we fall into illusion, fall into ignorance, and we develop karma, etc. And then we do all sorts of sinful activities. All this is contamination due to contact with matter. So the jivas in contact with matter, though they're conscious beings, they end up contaminated. The Lord is in close contact with matter, never contaminated. And he's more in contact with matter than each individual jiva. He's in contact with everything at all times. And still, avikari is completely separate from it in all cases. So the devotee should understand this nature of the Supreme Lord, that he is in a very special position, separate from all the jivas. And because we understand the position of the Lord and that he is different from the jivas, then we can perform devotional service. If we don't see any difference, we cannot perform bhakti. That is why we condemn the impersonal philosophy, because ultimately there's no difference between jiva and God. So therefore there's no bhakti. Understanding difference between God and jiva is very essential to perform bhakti yoga. And that's why we reject the process of jnana and impersonal Brahman, etc., because it excludes bhakti ultimately. So we see the difference between God and the living entities. And Supreme Lord is spread everywhere. He's in everything. Because of this, we see that everything is related to God. And thus we cannot condemn the material world or the spiritual world or anywhere, because God is everywhere and is part of God. And God is in all the jivas also as Paramatma. So we can also not reject any jiva. So the Supreme Lord spreading everywhere is also the opportunity for us to perceive God everywhere and understand that everything is an aspect or a face of God in some way or other, everything in the material world. And therefore, we do get the chapter on vibhutis in the Bhagavad Gita, where you see different things like a bird or a lion, and you relate it somehow as a potency of God. Somehow it's related to the Supreme Lord. So that's an appreciation of the Lord. This, of course, is also, we can say, a little bit primitive. It's a meditation for people that cannot really accept the spiritual form of God. They have difficulty understanding how does God have a form which is spiritual. So, okay, just look at the material world and see all the wonderful things there and see them as aspects of the Supreme Lord. That's material, of course, because we see the lion is brave or whatever, but that's material. it's not a spiritual strength or whatever of a lion. It's got a material body. But in this way, by seeing aspects, excellent aspects of the material world, then we can somehow understand the Lord has even more excellence. So that's a meditation for persons who are less advanced. So by understanding the Lord is everywhere, this helps us appreciate this aspect of the Lord also, that he is everywhere and in everything. A little bit a higher level, of course, not that he is the matter or he is the line or he is the mountain, but whatever potency that object has is because of the presence of the Supreme Lord. So we have statements in the Upanishads that talk about how actually everything moves by the Supreme Lord. The wind blows out of fear of the Lord. The sun shines out of fear of the Lord. The planets move out of fear of the Lord. By the will of the Lord, everything happens. The eye cannot see without the influence of the Lord. None of the senses can operate except by the influence of the Lord. And this is also expressed in the universal form. We have descriptions in the second and third cantos of how the universe is formed out of material elements, and then there's the big Purusha there with eyes and feet and arms, etc., and senses. Nothing can happen. That Virat Purusha cannot do anything. And then the Supreme Lord enters into it and then becomes active. And that form can see and handle things and can walk and can smell, etc., and have voice, etc. So all the senses and the parts of the body are dependent upon the Supreme Lord. Yeah? So that's another appreciation of the Supreme Lord. Okay, everything operates because of the Supreme Lord. This, of course, also is, in one sense, secondary, because it's material again. But we understand that the Lord is the prime cause of everything in the material world. So for that purpose, the universal form is considered to be a type of meditation. But also, for less advanced yogis. The more advanced yogis will simply meditate on Paramatma, feature of the Lord, who is actually a spiritual form, not something with material senses, etc. So, anyway, these are various ways in which we can begin to appreciate the Supreme Lord. So factually, of course, the Lord does pervade everywhere as Paramatma. He is, of course, in the whole Prakriti. He pervades Prakriti, and he glances over Prakriti as Mahavishnu. Then universes form, and he enters into each universe as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And then he enters into each jiva in each universe as Kshirdakshaya Vishnu Paramatma. So in this way, the Lord pervades all aspects of material world. And even when it's dormant, when there's pralaya and everything is destroyed, Mahavishnu is there. And he's the shelter of Prakriti and all the jivas who are still conditioned. And when he desires, then manifests again, and the Lord enters into everything. So, the Lord is instrumental for the whole of creation. But creation is secondary, in one sense, to the primary aspect of the Lord in the spiritual world, who is Bhagavan. So this Paramatma feature functions in the material world, Bhagavan functions in the spiritual world. And what does Bhagavan do in the spiritual world? He doesn't create anything. Everything there is eternal. And what does he do? He has pastimes with his devotees, that's all. So eternally he's engaged in activities with the devotees. And the Lord experiences bliss, and the jivas experience bliss there. And everybody has spiritual body, and there's no tamagun, rajagun, sattvagun, or anything like that. No karma, nothing. So that is the primary interest of the Supreme Lord. To engage in activities with his devotees in the spiritual world and experience bliss. So, this material world in which the Lord pervades as Paramatma and witnesses everything and causes everything to happen, it's a secondary aspect of the Supreme Lord. So that's why we put the Paramatma feature of the Lord as less than the Bhagavan feature. It's related to the material creation and everything happening here. But still, it is also personal. And is superior to Brahman, which has no form at all and doesn't do anything, really. It's just the Supreme Lord minus all of his Shakti, completely. So, Paramatma is a feature of the Lord, where he manifests his potency in relation to Bahiranga Shakti, the material energy. And he makes it operate by glancing over. He enters into it as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, as Kshirdakshaya Vishnu. He monitors everything and then makes it all disappear again. So, in this way, the Lord functions as the creator and destroyer of the material world. So, as a devotee, we understand the distinction between the Lord and the jiva. The Lord can do this, and the jiva cannot. The jiva has qualities like the Lord, but not all the qualities. So we say the jiva can have 50 qualities, the Vishnu can have 60 qualities. But even though with 50 qualities the jiva can get like the Lord, in small quantity only, not exactly the same amount. It's bindu bindu, little portions, point something percent of whatever quality of the Lord. 50 qualities are there, then the jiva can have a little bit of quality like that, but not exactly the same. So the jiva is quite limited in how much he can manifest. And it definitely says certain qualities the jiva cannot have. He cannot create universes. He cannot expand himself into avatars like this. Lord can do this, and Shiva cannot do this. So the jivas are quite different from the Supreme Lord. So we have to recognize that difference, and that's what a primary knowledge that we need in order to perform bhakti properly. If we don't recognize that difference, we cannot do bhakti. So we recognize difference. And then we recognize a relationship. Even though we are different, we also have some similarity. We are conscious. We can experience bliss. We can do activities, etc. So that's, Lord also does this. So we have similarity of the Lord. Based on the similarity, we establish a relationship. If there's no similarity, it's very difficult to establish a relationship. Of course, we can try to do that as we do in material nature. We have a relationship with an inner object, like a television or a dog, or dog's living, but a car, for instance. It's not so satisfying. So we prefer a living entity. So therefore, we prefer dogs over cars, maybe, like that. But even then, the limitation again, so then most people prefer human to human rather than human to dog relationship, because they're more similar. So similarly, jiva and God have similarities, and based on that similarity, they have relationships rather than jivas relating to matter itself. Of course, because of our particular ignorance, we identify with matter also through ahankara, and then matter identifies with matter, and we develop attraction to other material entities. So this is the problem in the material world, due to ignorance and ahankara, that we do become attached to matter and to material bodies because of gross ignorance. But always there's a dissatisfaction because we're actually not the body and we're not matter. We're atma. So there's a dissatisfaction because the relationship is one of matter to matter, but actually we want something different. So the real relationship is atma to Supreme Lord, like both conscious entities. And this gives rise to great bliss for the jiva and satisfaction for the jiva. So the God is different, but he's also similar. So the difference is also, we can say, well, if the jiva is so different from God, how can he have a real relationship? You know, it's not an equal relationship. And the answer is that God himself dissolves the difference. So we say when you get prema, then prema is Krishna Karshani, in the sixth quality of bhakti. It attracts Krishna so much that Krishna becomes controlled by the devotee. So that God in his superior position, that superior position disappears. And he may become less than God even. As we see in the case of Mother Yasoda tying up Krishna or whatever like that. The distinctions become blurred. And God does not look like the so different after all. So we have equal relationship as friend. We have superior relationship of Vatsalya Rasa, I guess. So God also, even though he is supreme, through the relationship of love, that difference, that great difference dissolves. It's there in all relationships, of course, but with Krishna it becomes even more dissolved. So in Vrindavan, the devotees completely lose consciousness or awareness that Krishna is God at all, and that he's powerful. And they think of him only as a friend, or only as a child, etc. So that's the unique feature of Krishna in Vrindavan. And because of that, the relationship can even get closer and closer and closer, more intimate, and consequently, the bliss becomes more. So that is why we say Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Because the relationship becomes closer, and the ananda becomes more intense. So that's the speciality of Krishna. So, Of course, I explained last night that also the within Vrindavan itself, also there's various intensities. And the ultimate intensity is in Madhurya Rasa with Radha Krishna. That's the highest intensity of bliss. And of course, Radharani herself is Sladini Shakti of the Lord. So that's natural. So, in other words, there's various intensities of bliss. And in Krishna, that's the highest form of bliss as compared to the other forms of the Lord. So anyway, the God is completely distinct from the jiva in one sense, but it's due to the similarity of both being conscious entities and due to the shakti of bhakti, and then the roles can even reverse and the distinctions become blurred because of the intensity of love between jiva and Supreme Lord. And then the devotee controls the Lord. So, in this way, we start out with making a great distinction between God and jiva, so we can perform bhakti, but in the worship of Krishna, then gradually, due to the rasa, etc., then the distinctions become a little bit blurred, and the devotee even forgets the identity of Supreme Lord, that the Krishna is Supreme Lord. However, to begin the process, we need that clear distinction, and therefore we find that emphasized in the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and other works. The difference between jiva and God is there. So these particular verses are about devotional service, but still here there's an emphasis upon seeing the aspect of the Lord where he pervades everywhere. We should not just see the Lord in the temple or localized like that. We should understand that he is very distinct from the jivas, and he pervades everywhere, and he's in everything. And everything is an aspect, somehow a reflection of the Supreme Lord. And of course, we can use that as some sort of meditation to see everything in the world as a reflection of God. If one reaches a higher stage and gets up to prema, the uttam adhikari, he has a similar type of vision, but slightly different. That is, he sees everything as inundated by prema and the material world. So he even sees the demons as devotees. Everything is a servant of the Lord. All matter is actually not matter, it's serving the Lord. It's like spiritual world where the gopis see the trees and the river and the flowers, they're all serving the Lord and they're full of ecstasy, etc. So a devotee in the spiritual world is in prema, then he looks at everything in the material world and he sees it as serving the Lord also in prema, even though it's actually still material world. But his vision is so inundated with prema, he sees everything in relation to the Lord, even the demons. Therefore, he's completely satisfied to just look at the world and have ecstasy, as if he's in the spiritual world. Huh? That, of course, is a higher level. So he's not talking about paramatma or anything there. Huh? But on a lower level, then, here, Kapila Dev is advising that you understand the Lord is different from us, and he's pervading everywhere. He's in everything in the material world. So he's not localized and limited by just being in the deity. Okay, any question? How can we derive them? Well, we can just say it's based upon emphasis of different statements of scripture, just as and then in the case of Mayavad philosophy, misinterpretation, emphasizing the oneness aspect, and then misinterpreting those statements also, and even the other statements. As far as the philosophies are concerned, we can say ultimately the philosophy is not so important in one sense, because all the Vaishnavas agree that you know the jiva is a jiva and the Lord is the Lord, and the process of bhakti is there to develop a relationship with God, etc., and affection. So we all agree on that. So the we call the philosophical aspects of Vishishta Dvaita, Dvaita, Sudha Dvaita, Chinta Veda, Veda, etc., are ways of explaining the relationship of God to the material world. That's all. And of course, we can say, well, that's not so important because we're just doing bhakti. Once we accept the superiority of the Lord, and that matters maya, it doesn't really matter too much. We just do the bhakti. But as far as intellectuals are concerned, there's a big problem because matter and God are so different. So how do we relate the two things? Huh? So these are all different ways of explaining the relationship of God and matter, basically, and God and jivas. And with slightly different tactics and slightly different emphasis of scriptural statements, etc. But we'll see some of them are quite similar. And even we take Dvaita, it looks quite different. Because it says no similarity, only difference. Everything's different. But we accept that, yeah, matter is unconscious, and it's completely different from God. We will accept that as well. And then we have Vishishadvaita, oneness with a little difference. Qualified oneness, Vishishtadvaita. So everything is one with the Lord, but within the oneness there is a little variety. Like we have a body as one, but then we have hands and feet and some qualification of the oneness there. So there's little distinctions between the head and the foot and the nose and the eye and the tongue, etc. So that's Vishishtadvaita philosophy. And of course, and then we have very oneness in Advaita philosophy, where there is no distinction at all, and we reject that completely. So there has to be some sort of distinction. So we get to Vishishtadvaita, and then we get various things, and we get Dvaita on the other hand. And then we have our philosophy, which is Dvaita and Advaita. Or Dvaita-Dvaita, or it's like Nimbarka's philosophy. We call Achintabheda-Bheda philosophy, where oneness and difference are both there. So similar to Vishishtadvaita in one sense. The only difference is the method of explanation is a little different. So, and why we have the oneness and the difference and whatever is because scripture says both things, that's why. That's one thing. And oneness, as I said, is an aspect of God, that everything should be one with God because he's an all-powerful entity and he should include everything and he's all-pervading, so he should be everything also. But then, how can it be matter because it's completely different and it's full of ignorance? So that's the big problem. So how to accommodate oneness with difference? When we want to accept difference because it's essential for bhakti, at the same time, oneness is there because God is everything. You know, and then scriptures say both things. So then how to accommodate both? So therefore we have different explanations of this and different interpretations of the scripture, different emphasis, etc. The merits of Achintabheda-Bheda are that we don't have to interpret either side, either the Advaita side or oneness or the different side. If we're going to take the Dvaita stance, then we definitely have to interpret every single statement of oneness that's there in the Upanishads. Only one Brahman exists, everything is one, everything else is useless. We have to start interpreting all these statements. Of course, if we go to the opposite side, the Advaita side, then he has to interpret everything about Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. He has to reinterpret it and say it doesn't actually mean that. It's only a conditional statement, but actually above that, then we go to another level and then like that. So either way, we have to interpret. So if we accept Bheda-Bheda, we don't have to interpret anything. Okay, we accept God is one. Only God exists. But everything is different. We also accept both. So that's the advantage. The disadvantage, of course, is it doesn't make sense because how can it be both? And that's the problem that we have, why they have to interpret one way or the other. So if we have Advaita, fine. We interpret everything that's Advaita as not Advaita. It's also difference. If it's oneness, we interpret all the different statements as being oneness ultimately. But to say that it's both one and difference, then there's a little contradiction there, logically. If an object is black, how can it be white? So we say this object, the microphone is black and it's white. Then it doesn't make sense. It's black. The book has a white paper in it. But this is not white. But we say the object is white and black simultaneously. It doesn't make sense. So we say that everything is one with God and everything is different from God simultaneously. It doesn't make sense. That's the problem. How can the contradictories be there? So that's why we call it achincha. Due to the inconceivable nature of God, with his shakti, he can make contradictory things coexist in the same object in himself. So he can be different from everything and one with everything simultaneously. That's how? Achincha shakti. His inconceivable energy can do that. He can be both things. So that's the answer to the contradiction there. Achincha shakti. So as I said, it's all interpretation in one sense of our explaining in such a way that we can bridge the gap between the Supreme Lord and material energy and Maya and why the jivas suffer in the material world and we don't have to blame God, etc. All these questions, evil in the world, why does it exist? It's all related to this idea of explaining God's relationship with the material world. And we can take different stances on doing that and how we explain it in terms of oneness or difference or both or whatever like that. But ultimately, it doesn't make too much difference in the sense of bhakti. But for philosophers, and they want to think about things and discuss, so it gives them an opportunity to argue. We can say also according to time. The thought evolves to some degree. So we start out with Shankaracharya, where he says only oneness in the most extreme form of no difference at all. Everything that's difference is actually Maya, illusion. So there is no difference in God. There's no parts of God. There's no qualities in God. No limbs of God. No form of God. Nothing in God. And there's not even a different entity at all. There's no matter at all. It's all illusory. That's the extreme of oneness. So then the first person, well, his line, his predecessors also, but the person who codified the opposition was Ramanujacharya. Okay, we're not going to accept this. Everything is one. It doesn't make sense to our experience in this world. And it just eliminates God and eliminates the process of bhakti, so we don't accept it. So, but he started from the idea of oneness of Shankaracharya. So then we can say the first step was, well, yes, there is oneness, but there's also difference within the oneness. So we accept oneness, but it's different. So he doesn't accept absolute oneness where there's no differentiation in God at all. No, God has a form, qualities, activities. It's all one, like one part of a body, so to speak. And then we add matter and jivas also. They're also like parts of the body. So they're like qualities. Just as we have an object, and blackness is the quality of this object. So the quality is not the object, but it's kind of inherent in the object at the same time. We take the blackness away, it's not the same object, it'd be another object then. It'd be a white microphone, not a black microphone, whatever like that. So the quality is not the object, but it is essential to its being, this particular object. So similarly, the jivas and matter and spiritual world and the form and qualities of God are one with God. Also, they're a little bit different. So there's like qualifications, like qualities. They exist like qualities to an object. So matter and jivas exist like qualities to God, so to speak. One with him, but slightly different like that. So that's the stance he takes from oneness. So then once that's established and there's a good opposition, then the followers of Shankara have to start writing papers to things to refute whatever Ramanuja says. So then it's an opportunity to go further than that, and therefore we get the extreme of Madhvacharya's Dvaita philosophy. Oh, why talk about the oneness at all? Just forget about it. Everything's different. And it's a simpler explanation. Don't have to speak in terms of quality and object at all. Just the nature of God is he's different from matter, etc. And he's supreme. And it's by his will that everything is different. Finish. No oneness. So like an evolution goes there. And then the final is to merge the two together, and we get that in achincha bhed, difference and non-difference simultaneously.
On one hand, we aspire to perform
Oh, yeah.
How do we deal with this?
With?
Is it conducive for your devotional service?
Get out of the material world. And we find, furthermore, whole sections on pure jnana, of just merging in Brahman. And we have a whole section on, two sections on yoga process. And we have another section on the karma yoga. Kapila has a whole section there. And then Krishna in the 11th canto again has a whole section. So all of these things are discussed. We have to see the relationship with bhakti. And then we also have to, within bhakti, see everything in relation to pure bhakti. So the Lord mentions all of these things, and therefore we find, okay, you do devotional service and you're free from birth and death or whatever like that. So we understand that as from the point of pure devotion, that this is a secondary result. The primary result of bhakti is that we develop our prema for the Lord. So this is only understood by taking the context of everything and seeing the conclusion. So if we look closely in the third canto, second canto, fourth canto, ever, we will find statements about how the real devotee of the Lord rejects even salokya and sarsti and all these things, which are parts of liberation, but to speak of just getting out of the material world. And he only desires serving the Supreme Lord. So those are the primary statements which indicate pure bhakti. And then we got the statements of, you get out of the material world, you get rid of your suffering, etc., destroy your karmas. So those are secondary results. Now, some people, of course, are more interested in those things. So that mixes the bhakti. We do bhakti to get rid of our miseries. Or we get bhakti to get some material advancement. This becomes karma misra bhakti, basically. And, of course, jnana misra bhakti, get out of the material world completely and stop our karma. So the Bhagavatam presents all of these different forms. But by the context of everything and seeing the overall picture, then we understand that pure bhakti is the actual process. So that's why we have to understand the Bhagavatam through the commentaries of the Acharyas, not just take it literally. He reciprocates. According to how we surrender, the Lord responds to us. Well, if we do a little bhakti, the Lord responds. But if we do more bhakti and surrender more, the Lord is more attracted and he does more for us, basically. We have, in the beginning, we have a little faith, shraddha. A little conviction in the Supreme Lord. So the Lord encourages that. And therefore he sends a devotee to us. And then we get some knowledge. And then we begin practicing bhakti. That's how he responds. The opposite of that is prema. The devotee is 100% dedicated to the Supreme Lord. And he has no other interests. Nothing for himself. Only for the Supreme Lord he wants to serve. So the Lord also completely gives himself to the devotee in the same way and gives himself to the devotee. So in prema, the Lord comes under the control of the devotee. So we can't say that at the beginning of Shraddha or all the way that the Lord is under the control of the devotee. But the Lord becomes more attracted to the devotee until prema, and then he is under the control of the devotee. So that's the response. We completely surrender to the Lord. The Lord completely surrenders to us. That's prema. So in the beginning, not like that. We do a little and the Lord helps us, encourages us or something. Which is only natural also, you could say. There are exceptional cases also of kripacity. Like Putana tried to kill Krishna. And then Krishna puts her in the spiritual world, gives her a spiritual body, spiritual world. How can that happen? She's a demon, not even a devotee. So he gives extraordinary response for the most minor service. What was her service? She dressed up like a gopi. At least she tried to, was for bad reasons, but she took on the clothing of a gopi, looked like a gopi. So then Krishna said, okay, because of that, mercy. So sometimes Krishna does exceptional things beyond the gradual type of response, but usually it's a gradual response, and this is what we call sadhana siddhi. We get our perfection by sadhana, gradually increase our attraction, and Krishna gradually responds more and more. Oh, well, that's because since we are coming out of the material world and we're covered by ignorance, we can't perceive everything. Just like by doing bhakti, all your karmas are destroyed. And in the case of Ajamil, he didn't do bhakti, he just uttered the name, my son is called Narayana, come here Narayana. And all of his karmas got destroyed. But he didn't even know his karmas were destroyed. And nobody else could see his karmas were destroyed also. The only time it was understood is when he was about to die and the Yamadutas came for him. And nobody could touch him. The Yamadutas couldn't touch him. And then the Vishnudutas said, because he has no karma, nobody can touch him. But nobody understood that. Even Ajamil didn't know that. So, because he was covered over by ignorance. If we're covered by ignorance, then we don't know the things that are happening in bhakti at all, what's happening. Yeah. The more we become uncovered, then the more we can see what is happening. So the Lord responds to the devotee definitely. And it says the devotee is in the heart and he is actually personally destroying the anarthas also. We don't see that. But he's doing something. Yes, sees everything as part of Krishna's prema. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's the general is that Uttamadhikari is fixed in prema, so he doesn't even preach. Then there are exceptional cases as well. So, just like Krishna, generally he responds according to how you surrender, but then he's also Kripa Siddhi and he gives certain people immediate elevation to the spiritual world, etc. So, with Uttamadhikari, the general thing is that they're so absorbed in prema that they have no vision of a necessity of preaching in the material world because everything is part of Krishna and it's all prema. But we see that, for instance, Narada Muni, he's actually Shakta Vaishavatar of the Lord, empowered to with bhakti, and he's in prema also, but he preaches. So there are cases where the devotees in prema also carry out preaching because of the will of the Lord and their great compassion, they do that. But the general description is that if one reaches that stage, then one is so absorbed in that one forgets about the material world completely.
So, what symptoms do these devotees display?
Prema?
No, Madhava. They have Uttamadhikari, but in Madhava platform, what symptoms they display which still makes them Uttama devotee, but of course they have.
Oh, well, one Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that if a person is on prema, then his power is such that he can deliver another person, even if they had no bhakti previously, he can deliver them up to prema. That's his potency. And we, of course, we see how Narada Muni gives prema. He gives mercy to Prahlad or to Dhruva, and they develop and they see God and whatever like that. So a great shakti is manifested in their preaching work. Of course, even though they are somewhat suppressing their higher symptoms, the symptoms also come out, manifest. So we see how Narada Muni sometimes goes into ecstasies and sattvika bhavas and things they display and he can't control them, etc. So that will also happen. Well, that from Chaitanya Charitamrita actually is based upon the nectar devotion, where it talks about bhava stage. Nichasidis bhavasya prakitam. So it says that bhava is achieved through sadhana. In other words, we do sadhana and the result is bhava. And so when bhava appears, it means the sthayi bhava, which means a relationship with the Lord, either shanta, dasya, sakya, etc. That's a sthayi bhava. And it's not created because it's spiritual. Anything spiritual should not have a creation. It should be eternal. So therefore that bhava that manifests in you in bhava stage is not created by your sadhana. It's simply manifested. So what does that mean? It's actually eternally with Krishna. It's eternally in the spiritual world. It's eternally in all the nitya siddhas and all the persons in the spiritual world. They have, or many of them will have a similar bhava as you. So that manifests in you, but it's an eternal shakti of the Lord that manifests in you at that particular time, which is composed of samvit and ladini shaktis. So those are not, they're not created. We don't create bhava or the samvit shakti or the ladini shakti. It's just manifests in you by the Lord's mercy, and it's eternal. So that's what nitya siddhasya means there. Well, there's two definitions of sarupa. There's a general definition, we say the sarupa of the jiva. So what is the sarupa of the jiva? He's conscious, cannot be destroyed at any time. He is aware of objects, other objects. He has a sense of I, identity, I aware of that, a sense of I, which is kind of on which we base ahankara, which is I in the body, but this is just a sense of I without the body. Ability to act, ability to experience, so therefore you can experience suffering or you can experience bliss or whatever like that. So these are, that's the sarupa of the jiva in one sense. The other sarupa is the spiritual form in the spiritual world, which we sometimes call the spiritual vigraha or whatever like that, or siddha deha or whatever like that we can call it. So the jiva in the material world, obviously nothing is manifested, he's got a material body, and he's not aware of any relationship with the Lord, even though it's got an eternal, by his nature, he's Krishna Das eternally. Nothing manifests. If we do jnana, what happens? The sarup manifests as being non-material, conscious thing, consciousness. That's what manifests. His sarup manifests as consciousness and emerges in Brahman. If we do bhakti, then, of course, we destroy the karmas and the subtle body, etc. And in bhava and prema, then the sarup and the spiritual senses manifest by doing bhakti. If we don't do the bhakti, nothing manifests.
Yeah, so, when we do bhakti, what manifests is it fixed? Or is it?
Well, everything is everything spiritual is eternal in that sense. But where is it? Is it in the jiva already, or is it not in the jiva? We don't know. We can say it's with Krishna ultimately. It doesn't really matter where it is because Krishna knows everything and Krishna's in control of everything. But it manifests in the jiva, in bhava and prema. That's all. But of course they also say, the acharyas say, that according to your sadhana, you get the result. So if you worship Vishnu, then you go to Vishnu Loka and you get four arms. If you worship Krishna, then you go to Krishna and you have two arms, whatever. And if you go worship in Madhurya Rasa, then you get a female form. If you worship Sakarasa, then you get a male form. So according to your particular sadhana, then you get a particular result. But also, accordingly as you do your bhakti, then the Lord responds. So you choose this form and you develop in that direction, then you get that form in the spiritual world. So that's why we have to carefully choose our sadhana also. So in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, we emphasize Radha Krishna. So we have Radha Krishna in our temple. So we're kind of influencing people to take up Madhurya Bhava and worship Radha Krishna in Madhurya Bhava. So that's the major thing. But exceptions are always there, as we see in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes also. Some people were in Sakya, some were in Dasya, some were Vatsalya also. But majority was trying to push everybody in towards Madhurya Rasa and Radha Krishna.
Like yeah. Saying they direct you in that rasa from day one, when they initiate you, they give you this is your position.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you think and meditate and
Not exactly day one, but they see if you're qualified. That's the Raghunuga Bhakti, part of Raghunuga Bhakti, not the only process, but part of it, in which you speed up the process by choosing a particular form or getting the particular form from the guru. And then with that particular form, you, in meditation, you meditate on serving in that form. And then when you get to bhava and prema, the actual form manifests. Just as Bharat meditated on a deer and became a deer. In the material world, of course. So we meditate in our particular spiritual form now, and as we develop, that's what manifests. So that's kind of what happens there, in the spiritual form, of course, not a material form. Huh? And we try to serve in that form, etc., so that it speeds up the process. Huh? And of course, as far as I know, they only have the Manjari Bhava, and Manjari thing, so they give you a particular name of a manjari, particular service, particular complexion, dress, etc. like that. So you get all the particulars and you meditate on that form and you do service in that form, and then you develop in that way. And then when you get bhava and prema, then you realize that form. So it becomes actual. And so in Raghunuga Bhakti, it's a sadhana only. It's not the actual, it's not the spiritual form yet. It becomes that form for you when you reach bhava and prema. Yeah, one can fall from bhava to bhava bas or whatever, or we see that Bharat had bhava and then he became a deer. But usually the stage is such that the Lord is very attracted to that devotee, so even if he falls from his position because he still has some anartha due to aparad or whatever, still the Lord protects that devotee and he advances further, as in the case of Bharat. So then he got to the next life as Jad Bharat and he got prema in that lifetime. So the Lord generally is very attached to those devotees, so he arranges for their further advancement, even if they have difficulty in bhava stage. That distinguishes bhava from prema, that you can fall from the bhava stage and not from the prema stage, because there is some anartha there in bhava. But because the bhakti is so strong, the Lord says, I will reveal myself anyway, even if he's not completely pure. Yeah? That's his mercy. Okay, Hare Krishna.